Coming to you from the kitchen slash podcast studio on the south coast of England in Brighton, this is the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge Podcast, your go-to hub for no-nonsense content and absolutely no false promises of passive incomes or getting rich quick. So settle in and join your host, Des Hamilton, to find out exactly how to say goodbye to being poor and hello to being rich. Sponsored by Cellaram. Sourcing analysis simplified.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge Podcast with me, your host, Des Hamilton. I'm the guy in the kitchen just outside Brighton that took £200. I am well over £80,000 and we aren't stopping. We aren't stopping. Thank you to our sponsors for this show. Thank you for Cellaram SaaS for continuing to be here. Cellaram SaaS is the sourcing analysis software. They are a fantastic model, and you'll notice that I showcase an awful lot of what it is they do, both on my short form content shows and on my YouTube. That is a great bit of software, and we are really glad to have them on board. This is part two of the Ask Me Anything. I am recording this back to back, so I have no idea how part one went down, because if it's terrible, well, have another one. At the time of posting this, I will be in Cornwall. Hopefully the sun is shining. Please look out your window and say a little prayer for me wherever you are. And if it's nice, I'll be on the beach. All be well. But this is what I've recorded before I've gone down there, because the graft doesn't stop. When you want to have fun, you need to put in an awful lot of effort before you have the fun, because otherwise there just won't be an episode next week. And not having an episode every Thursday is not an option. What good would a podcast be if the bloke didn't bother posting one every week? What's the point, right? It's a show. What would you do if you turned on the news one day and it wasn't there? Now, I'm not saying I'm the news, but you still need to be consistent. Otherwise, you would lose your followers in a heartbeat. Right, I went in deep with the advice before we'd even got to a question. Let's get into it, shall we? Last week, we would have covered an awful lot. I desperately needed a drink at the end of it. I've had one. can you tell? Let's get into question number one. Number one, how did you find the courage to start? It was necessity. It wasn't about courage. You know, it's a lovely question and it assumes that I was brave in some element, but I wasn't. It was necessity. We were struggling to make ends meet. We'd had a caravan that we hadn't been out in for 18 months because we couldn't even afford a camping trip. My wife and I had been together for about 4 years at this point, and we had never been on a holiday somewhere hot. Our honeymoon was a plane to Edinburgh. That was the only flight we'd ever got on. Now, I'm a Hamilton, you know, I'm partially Scottish, and I love Scotland with all my heart, but it's not hot. Here we are, 2 years later, and we still haven't had that holiday, but we are much, much closer now than we would have been, because what was interesting was our disposable income, our spending money, was dwindling more and more with every month. And we knew we wanted more children at the time, because we only had the three at the time. And we knew that money would be even tighter when a maternity kicked in or when a salary disappeared for a few months on statutory. We knew that mortgage rates were looking like they were coming up, because bills had gone up and up and up and up for the last few years. It just wasn't getting any better. So it was necessity. If I hadn't started this channel, I dread to think where we would have been. The loft that we started working on, we ran out of money on that. It's still unfinished 2 years later. If we hadn't started this challenge, we would have been in a much, much worse place. We would have been stressed. We would have been angry. We would have been bitter, resentful. The kids would have noticed it. You know, it's just ridiculous what would have been happening if we hadn't got here and we knew that something had to be done. So Claire started on traditional side hustles, surveys and secret shoppers and eBay and Vinted and all those things. And I started researching the bigger models that I knew would work. And this is where we got to. It wasn't a factor of if anymore. It was always a factor of when. We knew we were going to do this. And we did it properly. We've given ourselves the best chance of success we could ever possibly give us. And then once it got going, momentum followed so quickly. the success of the TikTok channel, the success of the Facebook group, the YouTube channel, quitting certainly wasn't an option when we saw what was achievable, because we had proved the concept worked. And this is really important, especially when you're selling on Amazon. When you get your first sale, your first monthly profit, your first payment from Amazon, it's not about how much it is. It's about proving the concept works, realizing that, hang on a minute, this isn't actually a scam. I put in £5 and it sold for £12 and I've made £3 profit for nothing. What if I then scale that up? It's that proof of concept that it just gives you such a boot up the backside to say, let's now go for it. Amazing. Who has been my favorite guest? Now, I'm not going to answer this. This came from Luke. This came from Luke Carwell. I've had a bunch of previous guests of the show ask questions on here. The previous one, how did I find the courage? That came from Lydia. The one last week, what would I do on day one if I could do it differently? That came from Robin. I love the community that we're building and I love the partnerships that we're building, because people mostly stay in touch and people mostly help out. When I threw it out there saying I need some questions, an awful lot of the people that I'd be in touch with came back and said, you know what, here's a question, because they knew it helped me. I love that. So the answer to who has been my favorite guest, all of you. What benchmarks did I have in place for when I wanted to scale up from online arbitrage to wholesale to private label and bundles, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, I'm going to put a bit of context on this. I've had a few people in my community, Facebook community, talking about the fact that they are struggling to scale up, even though they're making profit each month, the time that it's taking on top of their full-time job, on top of their parenting responsibilities, it's not enabling to take the leap and they're becoming disillusioned. Completely understandable. There comes a point in this where there is another leap of faith. And it's interesting, right? Because as I talk about on my journey an awful lot, everything I've been doing has been growing and growing and growing. There's been some months where we haven't grown that much. There's been some months where I've hit like 200% ROI. There's been another time where I've only hit something like 8%. There are plenty of times like that. 9 times out of 10, though, that slow month is because of a change of direction of some kind. When you're on online arbitrage, or even if you're doing wholesale and you're making consistent profits and you're reinvesting it and it's profitable, but as you put more money in, you're getting more stock, which then takes up more time. And then you're putting more inventory in, and then managing your inventory takes more time because you're not looking after 10 SKUs anymore. You're looking after 25. I get it. I do. The answer is outsourcing if you can. You need to take a leap of faith, and it's either hire a VA, and you might take a hit short term to do that, to cover your admin for you. Look into AI automation to see what can be shortened if you're doing anything to do with emails or newsletters or anything social. If it's purely Amazon that we're talking about, use a prep center. So in that regard, if you're making a wholesale order, it gets sent straight to a warehouse where it gets prepped for you and then sent into Amazon. I would always recommend my business partner, Steve Brady, e-com support, by the way, the cheapest out there and the most transparent, hands down. I would always recommend them. But all of a sudden, it stops being you in the mire, knee deep in products, staying up till 11 o'clock at night with a sticky brown tape and cardboard boxes. It does need to change, because you are starting to be the person now that is in charge of a business. And if you're scaling up, you need to scale up how many people are in your business as well. This is vital. One of those terms that really annoys me. If you're not working on your business, you're working in your business. What? Right, let's break that down. All that means is don't do the dog work. If you've got the money and you want to scale up, you need to hire someone else to do your dog work. But it doesn't have to be someone over in the Philippines if you don't want it to be. My mum, for the stuff that we buy that gets boxed up here, she does a lot of the boxing up for us. She also does some of the admin, so she's on the payroll. We've got loads of little things like this going on, but it's about learning how to scale up your time, your administration, and your processes. Because if the money's working and you're making hundreds, 200 pounds profit every month, and you know that you can put more money on that every month, the concept works. And you've had however many months of being a success, the evidence to prove it works. So then scale up. You will take a hit in hiring a VA, but if you know the process works, it's going to pay it back and then some, because you can then scale up and up and up. Easier said than done, I know that. And I understand the difficulties when you haven't hired someone like that before. But do me a favor, in the next 2 weeks, we're going to have Tom Parkinson comes on here and he talks about the realities, because he was where we are. And he then had a team of 20 taking care of him, to enabling him to make a seven-figure business twice. The benchmarks that I had in place, when I started this challenge, it was crude. You've seen the numbers that I run, the 30%. I had it in my head, right, I'm going to do online arbitrage until I get $5,000. And then once I've got $5,000, I'm going to go into wholesale. And once I've got $20,000, I'll go into private label. Didn't work that way. Never does. Never does. Because in fact, now I'm in private label wholesale bundles, OA, RA, and used books. private label is still new to me. We're still researching. And the beauty of everything else going so well is that we're not in a massive rush. We are 4 or 5 months ahead of schedule in the money that we thought we would be bringing in. And yes, it's nice to get more money in quicker, but I think it's more important to do it right and enjoy it. So we are enjoying the fruits of our labor at the moment, not through nicer things. The kitchen's still buggered. The loft is still unfinished. But we are going out on little caravan trips from time to time now. We are spending more time with the kids. We're just taking our foot off the gas a little bit, but still making good money. You know, these sorts of things. But I would recommend now, if possible, £500 to £750 for online arbitrage, because things have got more expensive. I would recommend about $5,000 for wholesale. And I would recommend about the same, to be fair, for private label, purely because it will take a couple of £1,000 to launch a product all in. And that includes advertising, that includes brand registration and a lot of the complexities. And ideally, you don't want to be reliant on any one product. And again, you would need to educate yourself on how properly to run private label. So I would recommend a mentor. And naturally, being the business model it is, it's not cheap to learn, but it shouldn't be. I want to make that clear. There's nothing wrong with private label being high ticket, because think of the money you can get out the back of it. How prepared am I practically and mentally to give up the day job? It's such a good question. It made me reflect, because I hadn't really given it conscious thought. Seeing my wife quit her job in the last couple of months, naturally you start thinking to yourself and you go, right, well, who knows when my time is up? But the fact is, I haven't really thought about it that much yet, because we still need all of the money that my day job provides, which means it's not an option. And everyone I've spoken to that has gone out of their way or coached people that did manage to quit their job, they all say, do not rush to do that. It's the mental side. All of a sudden, for the first time in my life after, 25-year career, I cannot take a salary for granted anymore. All of the money that I bring in is responsible by me and my wife. And if something happens to us, that's it. That's the money gone. And again, it just keeps coming back to the same thing. There are leaps of faith in the journey at various points, and they will not stop. I'm certain of this. So much of this is making it up as you go along, learning as you go. And I don't care if you're a 5-year vet or a 20-year vet. When I say vet, I don't mean animal hospital person. I mean veteran of entrepreneurialism. You are still taking massive gambles in learning what it is that you need to do to get to another step. Quitting my job is going to be massive. It's going to be massive, because I would solely identify at that point as my own business owner, as a content creator, whatever it is, a TikToker, going into a bank and asking for a mortgage or a loan. What do you do for a living? I make TikToks, pal. That's not going to go very well, is it? At the moment, I'm employed. I'm a salary person. I've got consistent money, much safer bet. In terms of the time it will give me back, yeah, I'm ready. I don't believe that it will be, I only work 3 hours a day. I don't believe that. And I'm not going to do that. I will be working 7 to 8 hours a day, the same way I currently do. The only difference is I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. That freedom there is vital. So I'll take a break in the middle of the day to go and do the school run, but then I'll work a couple of hours in the evening. Pure freedom, that is. And the beauty of doing something like this is that it doesn't feel like work. I love all of it. I really do. As I'm sitting here in my kitchen on my own talking to a computer, I just love this. Doesn't feel like work at all. So when it comes to mentally, the biggest challenge will be how I make sure I can bring enough money in. And again, an awful lot of this is the limiting beliefs that I've got in my own personality type. Because if we look at the evidence, we would need to pay ourselves much, much less just to cover the bills and then live on a dividend each month to tide us over and have nice things. Because the money that we're bringing in is higher than my current wage. We're bringing in more money than mine and my wife's combined. But what we would like to do is have enough to cover the bills, have enough to have nice things, and have enough to save to replace the pension that we are going to leave behind. And that means investing in property, in stocks, you know, precious metals, the classic stuff. But practically, I think we're sorted. It's the mental thing. But that will only take a couple of months, I'm sure. And when we throw as much time at this as we can, look what we've done part-time. That's the other thing. Look what we've done. It's just popped into my brain and it's just made me smile. Imagine what we can do full-time. Ooh, exciting stuff. What are my plans for after the challenge? Another question I get a lot. All I know is that I will be building things up. So 100 grand by that point, it's not about the 100 grand really. It's about how much consistently we bring in every month, because there will need to be a consistent basis every month for me to be able to leave my job. That's key. At the moment, it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit inconsistent, and everything we're putting in goes back into the business to make it grow. What would happen if we took a significant chunk out every month and didn't reinvest it? You know, that's what we'd have to think about. And that's what we need to prepare ourselves for. By the time we get to 100 grand, we should be at a point where that becomes an awful lot easier. And I wouldn't just quit my job. I would scale down, you know, part-time, 4 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week. And I would look to do it that way. Everything would be an incremental change, because to leap like that would be foolish. And we're not in the business of being foolish, are we? But after the challenge, I would look to then continue growing. I'm not going to do another challenge. I'm not going to do, oh, right, we've done 100 grand, let's do 200 grand, because by then it's over, you know. I'm in a place where I know I'm very comfortable. But I would carry on producing content because I enjoy that. Certainly carry on this podcast. I would look to expand my network more, and I would look to bring in or bolster the income streams that I'm currently working in. It's a really interesting question, because it goes hand in hand with, would I consider sponsoring someone to go through the challenge again on one of my channels? That was one of the thoughts that we did have. I thought, right, I've done my 200 to 100,000 pound challenge. Why don't we run a competition where somebody could go through their own 200 to 100,000 pound challenge, and I will teach them all of the things that I did in order to get through the goal as well. And then they could showcase it on my channel. And then I've got a brand. Goodbye, poor Addo Rich, the Des Hamilton 200 to 100,000 pound method. I'm not entirely sure that that is something that I do want to do. I do believe I can genuinely help people, but that's kind of what we're doing on the Facebook group. And that's what we're doing in the services we provide. We have already helped so many people get started on this journey. So many people are on a view to change their life, and they credit me for it, which is just unbelievable. So I would like to continue that as well. But it's just going to be more of the same. It's just going to be more of the same, only with much more time and nicer things. What have been my most successful categories? I'm assuming you mean Amazon selling on this. Long story short, when we did online arbitrage, cosmetics. But you'll find that an awful lot of people sell an awful lot of cosmetics, because they're small, they're light, they take up no storage space at Amazon. They take up so you can pack hundreds and hundreds inside a box, and it would still only be £3 to send up to the warehouses. Cosmetics are everybody's favorite thing. There are always discounts being run on cosmetics as well. So we always sell those. I found my first replen was the Win A Lot dog food, and it kind of gave me a love-hate relationship with pet food, pet products. Even though we haven't got a dog, I want a dog, but we haven't got one. So I get into pet products a lot. You can get an awful lot of replens. They're very rarely on sale, but for some reason or other, there's usually a markup on Amazon. During the colder months, we do well with sweets and chocolate. They do really well. For some reason or other, people buy chocolate on Amazon. I don't get it. Why would you want to do that? if you want a bar of chocolate, why would you wait for the next day delivery? Never mind. But those are the products that I find. Homeware, B&Q stuff does well because there's less competition. People will go for cosmetics because they're small and light. They will leave home and garden because they're big and bulky. And the other thing is hazmat. Everyone goes through hoops when it comes to ungating. I talk about this in my course a lot. Why do people jump through so many hoops when it comes to ungating and then they balk at the thought of a hazmat product? Why? Why aren't you jumping through those hoops for hazmat? And it's amazing how many people don't bother with hazmat because it's too hard or it's just a challenge. But then they'll go through an ungating exercise. Hazmat offers you so many opportunities because so many people don't bother with it. Just run your numbers. Find out how much it is to send into Amazon. Find out how much it is to do it FBM in your own house. Because if the profit is still there, do it. Your competition will be so much less. It's incredible. I would really recommend that. RA and OA invoices. Basically, that was the question. I understand where they were coming from because the context was, how can you do retail arbitrage and online arbitrage if Amazon asks for invoices? Now, what we want to do, this is a bit technical at this point. Amazon only asks for invoices in two situations. Number one, are you asking for authorization to sell in a particular brand? Or number two, has there been a claim that what you're selling is inauthentic? Is it fake? Did you buy it on a high street in Turkey? Those are the only times Amazon will ask for invoices from you as a seller to prove the authenticity of what you're doing as legit. 99.9% of the time, you won't need these. I've only done it on a handful of occasions, and here we are 18, 19 months into our journey with a fairly significant amount of stock being published. The ungating exercise is understandable. You will need an invoice. And for that, you are meant to go to the manufacturer or a distributor, which is another word for a wholesaler. You need to do that. You can get them from online stores. I have been ungated with Boots invoices before, or anything else. But I talk about this a lot in my course. There is a spectrum. The top end is the manufacturer. And then next to that, you've got a distributor and a wholesaler. The bottom end is in person at a supermarket or a TK Maxx, TJ Maxx, any of those. For an ungating exercise, you can try your luck. You don't get penalized for asking repeatedly, but I would always recommend at the very least go with an online arbitrage example. And if you can, anywhere, manufacturer or a distributor would always win the day. When it comes to authenticity claims, if you are shopping somewhere at TK Maxx, TJ Maxx, Walmart, Target, any of those places, and you want to get a receipt to prove that your product is legit, do your due diligence. And again, that's one of those phrases that drives me mad because what the bloody hell is due diligence? And it's hard to say. Do your research. Go in there as if Amazon are on your shoulder asking what it is you're doing. And it all comes down to record keeping. It all comes down to firefighting prevention. Really, really important. Because if the claim comes in and it's too late, you are scuppered and you have to hold your hands up and say sorry. If you're in TJ Maxx, if you're in TK Maxx and you find a product, you scan the product as you normally would with your scanning software, Selleramp SaaS. Then what you do is you take a picture of that barcode using your camera. You take a picture of that. You take a picture of yourself holding it in the store. And when you buy it, you take a picture of the receipt with the number of the barcode duplicated on that receipt with the picture you've got of your product. And then you store it in a Google Drive folder and you forget about it. That is enough. So if Amazon say, we need an invoice to prove that this item is legit, you can say, this particular store doesn't provide invoices, but here are pictures of me in the store with the product and the receipt. Done. Amazon will have no problems with that. Jamie, bless his heart, before he passed away, he got done by an authenticity complaint because he was buying fart machines in B&M. Someone said to him, this fart didn't sound authentic enough. We think it's fake. This is a true story. So. Jamie, though, he and I were in touch all the time. He had sent me pictures of him buying this fart machine in B&M. And he took those pictures and he sent them in and it worked. That's what you need. Again, thinking outside the box And again, it's all about prevention. Every single product you buy might be subject to a claim. Just make sure you can put it out. And again, it just comes down to record keeping. Hope that helps. What have you got coming in the pipeline? Now, this isn't a feeder question, I promise you. That was a legit question. And I can only give away a certain amount. Steve and I have been working on a project for over a year now, specifically on wholesale. So we are selling wholesale. We are putting structures in place to make life easier on selling on wholesale, and also putting things in place to help people transition from online arbitrage to wholesale. As we're getting into wholesale, we're finding there are things that need to be shared or things that need to be explained better or louder. The difficulties in selling in wholesale, the challenges you would need to overcome. It's not just a case of ringing up a brand and saying, hello, can I sell on Amazon? It's not just you using your hotmail.com email address saying, hello, I would like to sell on Amazon. I would like to sell your products. Can I open an account? There's so much more to it. It's much, much more difficult to find products, to find suppliers, to negotiate with people, manage inventory as big as that. And we feel there is an awful lot we can do in this space to make life easier. It's the natural step next for what happens once we teach people online and retail arbitrage. And we believe our methods and the things we can supply. Steve is unbelievable. He worked for Microsoft on building Excel. So his systems and his processes are second to none. And we believe we have got something really exciting that we can do in that space to help you further. That's the big project for us. In terms of what I'm doing with my Amazon selling, private label is going to be big for me. Claire is doing bundles. I'm doing private label. Claire's also doing wholesale, but I'm kind of dabbling on that as well. I'm intending to do online arbitrage through the VAs that we've got. All of this stuff is coming down the line. On this podcast, I've got very big hopes and plans for this podcast. Bigger guests, better guests, friends of the show, live shows, reoccurring guests. All of that stuff is coming down the line. We are not stopping anytime soon with this bad boy. We've got a website that's being developed, so we're going through a bit of a rebranding on our website. We've got loads of stuff going on, and it should see us through for a couple of years. In the meantime, though, that's the last question that I've got, which sees us through quite nicely. This might be a bit of a shorter episode after the edit, but you never know. Let's see how we go. Listen, it's been really nice doing these again and dipping back into these questions. What would be really interesting is if you listen back to previous Ask Me Anythings, because some questions are similar, and it'd be interesting to see how my answers have changed. I have no doubt if I run this again in 6 months' time with the same questions, they'll probably change again. But this is where I'm currently at, and this is the whole beauty of the journey, isn't it? I'm hoping that you can follow along at every stage of your journey and be somewhere where either I was or I am at. But it's been a real pleasure, and I'm hoping that you enjoyed these. Please let me know what you think. Please tell your friends about this if you know that they're interested in any form of e-commerce, or just interested in a guy working hard in his spare time, juggling kids' responsibilities and a job, trying to make a better life for himself. And I will share everything I can along the way. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. I'm really, really grateful to you for tuning in. Thank you again to our sponsors. And we are back next week with our traditional format. We have got Tom Parkinson from Fast Track FBA coming in. Tom has built two companies that are seven figures. He runs a team of VAs. He hires out VAs and more and everything in between. He's a guy from Southampton who now lives in Mexico through Amazon selling success. What a story. I'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge podcast. Be sure to join us next time for more real talk and undoubtedly terrible jokes as Des gets ever more closer to saying goodbye poor, hello rich. Sponsored by Sellerm. Sourcing analysis simplified. Just a little reminder that this podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. It cannot and does not constitute any form of financial advice. We know things are tough for a lot of people right now, so if you need assistance organising your money, please seek the help of a qualified financial advisor.